Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner along with Chris Lucas. We are now going to be affiliated with the inaugural launch of the Hockey Writers podcast page over at thehockeywriters.com. We're talking with J.D. Stiles from Cali Sports News, reporting live from the Stanley Cup Finals. And today we're being joined by the first general manager in Las Vegas franchise history, George McPhee.
With Pat Quinn, you know, I'm likely the finest man I've ever met in my life.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast. We're talking with Quinn Mlarchuk.
There's something about George McPhee that everybody says is a good pick.
This is the Vegas Hockey Podcast, and we're talking with Dana Lane, play-by-play voice of the UNLV Rebel hockey team and owner of Dana Lane Sports. Joining us now is Matt Pryor of thehockeywriters.com. He's coming to us from the Dallas Star training camp.
Hello, hockey fans, and welcome to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. This is Mark Warner along with Chris Lisa. Thanks for joining us today. We got a good show on tap for everybody today. We have Zach Devine, a contributor for the Hockey Writers for the San Jose Sharks. He'll be joining us a little bit later. Dana Lane from Dana Lane NHL also will be joining us today. Talk about UNLV hockey's four games in 4-day weekend up at a tournament in Utah. So far they're 3-0. We're gonna break the ice here as soon as I can get Chris on the line.
How we doing?
There we go. We're doing real good. Thanks for coming in. It's been a while since we've talked. I've been kind of upside down in my schedule. It took me a long time to get last week's show out, but it is now finally up and posted. We were talking a little Montreal hockey with Nick Guido over at the Writers. And a cool website for expansion draft guys. If you want to put together a mock NHL team for the Las Vegas Knights, you can go to planmyteam.com. Good conversation with him. And Dana Lane came in with a Rebel Report, as always. And he saw the logo. So if anybody, he didn't give us any details on it. He wouldn't crack as much as we tried, but he does talk a little bit about it in general. So go listen to our last show over on SoundCloud or iTunes. What's going on, Chris?
Not a lot going on in the league. I guess we'll do start with the breaking the ice segment, and I'm going to rely on your experience here. It seems like it was a huge win for the Arizona Coyotes. They get their building deal done in Tempe. Like I said, that's more your neck of the woods. I know you've spent time in Arizona. So sounds like a big win, I would imagine. Would you agree with that?
I would. I think it's time to get out of Glendale. They obviously weren't happy with them as tenants for whatever reason. There's still work to be done on that. They did partner with Arizona State University Sun Devils, so there'll be about a 4,000-seat arena for the college there in conjunction with a 16,000-seat stadium for the Coyotes. There's still work to be done on the financing. I think they still have to do some approval stuff, but they have a deal in place, so I think it'll be good for them. It's more in the East Valley. Close to the college, so hopefully it'll be easier for people to get to than out on the far west edge of town. I think it's good for them, and I hope Glendale enjoys having an empty arena there, because pretty much every time you get a new arena, all the acts that come through town that would usually play an arena that size, they're going to be booking the new arena. So I hope the city of Glendale City Council enjoys paying for all the maintenance that they were whining about with no anchor tenant and probably not very many traveling shows coming to town. So they got what they wanted, and I hope they enjoy it.
Well, that's yeah, it's good for the community. It seems like they can, they can move, they can move on and be much more better located for their fan base. And do we know what time on Tuesday, the 22nd, in terms of the big announcement, what time that's going to kick off in terms of Vegas will finally reveal its name as well as the logo? Do we know what time Vegas time that is on Tuesday that press conference will happen?
I believe it starts at 5:30. I'm pulling up my press release now. Next Tuesday, I believe 5:30, and then the doors open at 6:30. They're going to have hats and shirts and stuff with a logo on it. So we're all looking forward to that. I think a lot has been made about the name of the team and how long it's taken and the process. And we know it's going to be the Las Vegas something Knights, and everybody is just going to refer to them as the Knights. So having that extra little name in front of it, whether it's Desert Knights, Silver Knights, Black Knights, I don't really think that matters so much. I think it's just going to be, you know, for us here in town, the Knights. And it'll be a fun event. I'll be there, of course. I'll tweet about it. I'll get the picture of the logo as soon as I can, and I'll be live tweeting it from in there. So check it out at Vegas Hockey Pod Tuesday around 6:30, and I'll get the logo posted as soon as I can. Bad week to be a leg in the National Hockey League. We had Stamkos with the meniscus. You had Hall with the meniscus. Last night, Brad Richardson breaks his fibula and tibula. That was pretty gruesome. I'm a fan of Brad Richardson. He spent some time with the Kings, won a Stanley Cup. Really, really good, solid on the forecheck. Really good third-line player. Possesses the puck well. Has decent speed. That's going to be – I mean, the Coyotes haven't done much so far, but that's going to be a piece they miss for sure. Thomas Hertl goes down last night with another knee injury, right knee, same one that he's injured previously. If you're a shoulder, and Darren Helm, you're out for 6 weeks with a separated shoulder. And
Don't forget about Johnny Gaudreau's finger.
Yeah, that was my next one. If you're a finger with Johnny Gaudreau, that he did tweet out the surgery was successful and he's planning on coming back soon, but that's probably at least a month out. Which out of all five of those, I mean, I guess you could take Richardson out of play. So if you're in last place, I don't think my question is going to really be relevant, but who's best situated right now to withstand that injury to their team?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you have to go with Tampa Bay. That club has. The only thing I would say is the Stamkos injury is by far the most serious. And you know, with injuries, it's hard to say. They always say, well, the timeline is this. They're kind of saying 4 months. First, it was 4 to 6 months. Now they're saying it's 4 months. And 4 months would take us to the middle or third week of March. And you know, then in a perfect world, Stamkos could have 3 weeks to get situated, get accustomed back to playing, and get ready for the playoffs. So in terms of, and if that plays out, that's all well, fine and dandy. You know, it's, the Lightning are deep enough and good enough that for the regular season, without Steven Stamkos, they'll be fine. They'll probably, you know, finish second in the division, probably will be the difference between them winning the division and then finishing second. I don't know how much you want to go crazy about that. However, come playoff time, as we saw last year, as tough of an opponent as they were, you know, they came up a little bit short, and they only had Steven Stamkos for only one game, and, you know, odds are he was not at his best given all the time he's missed. So come playoff time, they have to have a Steven Stamkos that's ready to rock and roll. So that's going to be the storyline there. And just to touch on the other two things real quick, Taylor Hall, you know, I've been worried about New Jersey in terms of their depth. they just don't have any. I mean, yes, Corey Schneider's amazing. Taylor, then you have 330 goal scorers and Taylor Hall, Kyle Palmieri, as well as Adam Henrique. So, but they're just not deep enough. So losing Taylor Hall for 3 to 4 weeks, that's going to test that club. And then Johnny Goudreau, the Flames, they're trying to get back to relevancy, back to 500, which seems like that whole, the upper half of that division is in. So the last thing they need is more more setbacks. So this is a critical time for all teams off to a slow start or if not to a good start. So those are my three thoughts on the big injuries there.
Yeah, bad week to be a leg. I kind of agree with pretty much everything you ran down on, with New Jersey holding down a playoff spot right now. Seemed like they were getting their legs under them, and Tampa started slow, but they were coming on. I don't know. I think you're right that they're best suited to absorb that. They've proven they can do it without him. So, I mean, it's tough to lose a 60-goal scorer like that, but 6 to 8 weeks, he'll be back. I think Tampa will be fine. If New Jersey
Stamkos
can't
be out, Stamkos will be out 4 months.
4 months on a meniscus? Ooh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, he's going to be out 4 months.
Okay, well that's
the original report was 4 to 6. Now they kind of downgraded it to 4. So again, sometimes with injuries, things come along a little bit more quickly. They say 4 months. It's not like it's written in stone. You know, maybe it winds up being 3 months. Maybe it winds up being 5 months. So, yeah, he had a pretty serious injury. To his surgery or his situation was more serious than the others. So,
okay.
And again, there's a difference. They'll be fine for the regular season. I mean, they won again today. They won in Philadelphia, I believe, 3-0. They're deep enough. But as you know, Mark, come the gauntlet of the hockey playoffs and to beat, you know, the elite teams in the East. They're going to have to no, it's possible the Lightning to get to the Stanley Cup final might have to be, let's just say, the Canadiens. They probably wouldn't play the Canadiens in the first round, but they might have to beat 2 out of 3 between the Canadiens, Penguins, and the Capitals. I mean, that's a tough road. So they're going to need Stamkos not only back but ready to contribute at full throttle.
All right. Well, we still have a couple minutes going. I'm gonna play interviewer here with you for a second. What's up with the Islanders? I know you have a few articles you've written lately. I think you called for everybody's head to go on the chopping block there. Talk a little bit about your Islanders, sir.
I'll just give the 60-second rundown. Basically, they haven't been playing well. They haven't been scoring. They have blown a lot of third-period leads, which with their defense and their goaltending should be few and far between. Their specialty teams have been terrible. There's been too many line changes with the coaching. Confidence is running low. And then whatever could go wrong has gone wrong in terms of, you know, whatever you want to call it, puck luck and things of that nature. It's not good. I mean, they're tied with the Sabres for the lowest amount of points in the Eastern Conference, which is a little surprising at this point in time. So it seems like ownership's plan. There was a big article with Gartsnow before yesterday's game, kind of held court with all the press on Long Island at the practice facility before practice. And maybe that was on Thursday, actually. And basically saying, you know, we're committed to this team. We believe in this team, believe in this coaching staff. And, you know, it seems to me that the new ownership group, which is this first year, which they, I'm sure they didn't want this situation, it looks like right now they're going to ride it out. And, you know, if they come up short, then changes could happen at that point in time.
You have reached the voicemail box of 7024718777.
Hello. All right, that was odd. Are you there still? Okay, we had a glitch go. Hope I didn't just lose Chris in the middle of that. Oh, well, anyway, we're going to have Zach Devine from thehockeywriters.com joining us at 4 o'clock. We're going to be talking San Jose Sharks, their start, Stanley Cup hangover. We're going to see which players he thinks they're going to lose and whether or not they're going to I apologize. I'm trying to do some work on the studio screen as well. Hello.
Hello.
There you are.
Yes. That was apropos in talking about the Islanders because everything just kind of fell apart there on the show. So, you know, a little irony there. So, yeah, I mean, the other problem is, as you know, Mark, when you get off to these bad starts with your team, it's not easy to climb back. You have to put together a heck of a string. I think it's somewhere around a third of the games are 3-point games. So when you're chasing teams, even on night teams that you're chasing lose, they still get a point. So it's not good. I wrote a positive article between yesterday and today that should be up on Monday on their prospect pipeline. So it was good to write about something positive for a change. But it's a bit bleak. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, I think we're having trouble getting Dana on the line here. So we're going to do a little bit of filler for 15 minutes. I had a little little brain fart there on working with this Blog Talk Radio studio. It's kind of weird to work with, but anyway, we got I'll throw down a little bit of Kings talk here since we did a little bit of Islanders. We talked earlier in the season when Quickie got hurt and then Zadkov went down that I think I believe you used the phrase tread water is what they needed to do. And Budaj's come in and played just, you know, probably better than most people expected after his year he had last year with the Monarchs. I was kind of excited to see him play back in the NHL, and he had just played his 300th NHL game, but he's coming through to 2.12 goals against and a 912 save percentage, I believe. So he's doing his job. I think they're missing more of Gabrick's speed and shot, and people have been playing, you know, higher up on the depth chart. I think kind of the same as you were alluding to with New Jersey, there is moving people up in the depth chart really weakens your bottom, and the secondary scoring for the Kings has been non-existent except for Nick Dowd, who's a rookie who's actually impressed me pretty well. They are, last time I checked, they were up today, but it was the first period was typical of what we've been seeing the last couple. Okay, 4-2 final. Kings finished it off. Against the Devils, they were leading in shots 19-9, out hitting them, winning in the faceoff circle, and for a large part of the period losing 1-0, and then it got to 1-1, and for whatever reason, and I don't know why, Coach Sutter likes to break
you
up.
You have reached the maximum time permitted to record. To send your message, press 1 at any time.
Oh, come on. Anyway. Yeah, the Kings were playing their typical game, out shooting, out possessing, out everything, and still losing. So when Gabrick comes back and you can get a first line with Kopitar when he comes back, that's going to settle everything down. And what I was saying, Sutter likes to, what I was saying was Sutter likes to break up the 70s line and move Toffoli up, move Pearson down. He tried Setoguchi on the wing with Carter, and I really don't see any reason ever to break the 70s line up. And now due to injuries, he has put them back together the last couple games since they got off that disastrous trip through Canada. And they proved to be as dynamic now as they were, you know, during the runs that they had previously when they were skating together. So I think you have to leave that line together. When you get Kopitar and Gaborik back, I think that's going to let people play a little bit farther down the line. One pleasant surprise so far this season with the Kings anyway is the play of Dustin Brown. He seems to be back to the Brown, maybe not all the way back, but certainly on pace to have a better season than he has the last couple of years. I think maybe he has something to prove, a little angry maybe going into the season, but he's certainly been playing a lot of good hockey. What else do you see going on around the league, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, to me, with the, just real quick on the Kings, it really comes down to depth of that team, both on the blue line as well as their forwards. What really jumps out at me when you look at the Western Conference is, you know, the Blackhawks are playing tremendously, and you know it seems like almost everyone else, all the good teams that you would think, are either, you know, they're at 500, they're game over, they're game under. I think the two best teams, the two best records in the West after the Blackhawks are the Blues and the Ducks. And, you know, if you go by the NHL math, for instance, going into this today, the Ducks, I think, were 9-6-3. But if you go by regular math, they played 18 games and they've won 9 of them. So, I mean, that's 500. So it's kind of interesting. And then you have a couple teams really struggling, like Arizona and Vancouver and such. So it's kind of interesting, kind of a and the Oilers have really come back to the pack. So the Western Conference is kind of interesting in that regard. The Blackhawks, who, like you said, Mark, don't ever bury them because they'll come back. And I was one of them where I wasn't burying them. I was concerned with the depth of that team, and look at what they've done so far. So that really is a situation out west that jumps out at me.
I agree with that. And we were doing our central preview show, and I really wanted to shovel the dirt on the Blackhawks, and it's just one of those things with those guys. You can't I think you could put, what is it, Little Sisters of the Poor, and as long as you have Crawford, Kane, and Taves, I think they could probably make the playoffs. It's so hard to kill that team that there they are once again. Second place overall in the National Hockey League, leading their division by 5 points, and they're 16 games in. Interesting looking at that division. Go ahead.
No, I think the fact that they, you know, as much as it must have hurt, but losing in the first round last year for a team that usually plays deep into the year, having that extra time off, probably, you know, recharged and revitalized and helped with a lot of the bumps and bruises and a lot of hockey that organizations played the last number of years. So that's probably helped in terms of them springboarding this year as well.
Yeah, I looked at the standings the other day, and there they were, top of the West again. No change there. It is. You did mention Edmonton coming back to the pack, and I was able to catch a little bit of that game. They were on fire, and I think now I saw someone's tweet today. I think it was Zach's that Connor McDavid is now really in a slump. I wanted to talk, and when we did the Atlantic Division show, and I was really excited to see Marner, Nylander, and Matthews all play together and get a glimpse at the future of that. All three of those kids are playing great hockey. They certainly didn't disappoint me. You're on the East Coast and probably get a chance to watch a little more Maple Leaf hockey than I do. What's your impression on those three kids?
Oh, they're going to be tremendous. I mean, they already are off to, you know, great starts in their career. They have the right coach there to help them with the fine and rough edges. We've talked about this before on the show. To me, the goal of that organization is going to be about getting the blue line up to speed. And so that's going to be their goal going forward in terms of trades, in terms of free agency, in terms of the draft. So I think they're going to be a real fun, exciting team, which they have been so far. I think they're either right at 500 or a game over or so. I don't think they'll make the playoffs this year, but I think it'll be a good learning year for that organization. But that blue line needs a lot of work to take the next step, if you will. So I think Frederick Anderson took him a little bit of getting used to things in Toronto. Got off to a little bit of a slow start. Again, he's not having the same team defense played in front of him in Toronto as he did in Anaheim. But, very good days are ahead for the Leafs, to say the least.
Yeah, I've been able to watch a few of their games whenever they get a national broadcast here, and they're fun to watch again. I think Matt Pryor told us once, if you can't win, lose exciting, and that kind of applies to them right now because they're a fun hockey team to watch right now. They are 8-6-3 as we speak, 1 point out of the wild card, and I forget who we were talking to. They said they had Toronto pegged at the 9 or 10 spot all season long, and I thought that was a stretch. But they're right there in the 10 slot in the East. So, you know, they get on a hot little run, get some confidence. Like you said, Freddie Anderson gets used to things up in Toronto. You know, New Jersey might be, like you said, poised to fall down with the Taylor Hall injury. Toronto might squeak in there. We'll have to check with Matt back in a little bit. He's got that playoff prediction system that he hits pretty solidly, 90% prediction rate at about the 20-30 game mark. So I'm going to have to text Matt and see where he has Toronto here in a few games.
And the East is kind of the opposite of the West. I mean, if you look at it, the Blue Jackets are off to a really strong start. And, you know, it might be the difference because of games played, but I believe they're fifth in the Metro as an example. The Panthers, you know, they've been up and down this year, but they're towards the bottom of the Atlantic because other teams are above 500. Ottawa's playing well. I mean, really, in the East, the teams that jump out that are really struggling are, as I mentioned before, the Islanders, the Sabres, and the Hurricanes. But, so there's a lot of teams that are going to be vying, if you will, for that wild card, because the Rangers are playing tremendous. You got to figure if they're going to, you know, they've already developed a cushion, but they're going to be playing this well in the regular season. And you have the Rangers, Caps, and Penguins. There's your three in the Metro Division. You got to figure it's going to be the Canadiens and the Lightning for sure in the Atlantic. That leaves kind of one spot open for one of those other teams, and then for that wild card.
Right.
Yeah. So it's going to be stiff competition, to say the least. But again, I think Toronto is definitely doing the right thing, and I'll be curious to see how they move forward with some of these moves and some of these ideas in terms of potential trades.
Well, the contrast to the East and West, I saw some today where it said the Western Conference was on pace to need 87 points to get into the playoffs, and the Eastern Conference was on pace to need 101 points to get into the playoffs. So, that's quite a big shift this early in the season to have things opening up that big. And it's actually, if we go back and look, the last decade or so, it's been the West that you could say easily was the dominant conference. And a lot of youth coming back up in the East, and think times they are a changing perhaps. We got the Penguins last year. They're right there in it. Capitals are right there in it. Do you think, and we talked with Nick Guido last week, what do you think about the Canadiens, Les Habitants? You think
they look pretty good,
right?
Yeah, and, especially if they can add a defenseman. If they can add another really solid defenseman to that group that they have, and Carey Price stays healthy, that's going to be a tough out. I mean, if the Rangers are for real in terms of getting back to contending status, you know, the Penguins, the Lightning, and the Capitals are all there. I mean, those are five tough teams right there out of the East. So the Eastern Conference could be a real gauntlet to get to the finals.
Yep. Well, while we're waiting on Zach to join us, let me do a little business. I got Victory Martial Arts here in Las Vegas is doing another special. If anybody here in Las Vegas is looking to get their kids or themselves into a mixed martial arts program, Victory Martial Arts is the way to go. They have kids programs in Taekwondo, kids programs in Krav Maga. They have kids programs in Anthony Pettis's MMA Showtime. It's kind of a combination of jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, and, you know, striking, boxing, the full MMA package. They're doing a special where if you go in, you get four free classes, and then if you show up, they have a deal for, I think it's $99 a month for the kid, and then another kid is 20% off, and then the third kid would be free for that 2-week trial period. So if anybody wants to go down and do some MMA, then Victory Martial Arts is the place to go. You contact them at Victory Martial Arts on Twitter or victorymartialarts.com. Well, sir, we're kind of in a lull here. What you want to talk a little bit of politics? It's been an interesting week.
Definitely not. So we're waiting on Zach. And the one thing, I read an interesting article within the last day or so at and just interrupt me when Zach pops up on ESPN talking, and I was going to mention this to Dana about it, called Expansion Shenanigans. And I guess there's a concern around the league that, you know, the existing NHL clubs are worried with this 48-hour window that Vegas is going to kind of have a handshake deal with these players during this window and then not sign them during the window, pick somebody else from their team, and then sign them, you know, midnight or whenever, or noon on Eastern time on July 1st. And then conversely, Vegas is worried about the opposite of players that will be exposed in expansion who are free agents to be, that the existing clubs will have a handshake agreement. So if they take them in expansion, should be noted that there's some stiff penalties if any club violates the expansion rules. You lose a first round draft pick. So I'm sure the NHL is going to be monitoring this, and this was brought up at the GM meetings this week as well. So. That was an interesting story I read this week. Mark, are you there? Okay. So looks like we lost Mark for a second. So we're waiting on Zach Devine. We're going to talk about the San
I'm back.
Jose Sharks. Okay, we're going to talk about the San Jose Sharks and as well as some of the other teams in the Pacific. Get his insights on the draft coming up in June. I know it's early, but we want to get a couple of things in from a Vegas perspective. We got you back, Mark.
Oh yeah. I was going to say we're certain to have, you know, quite a few little backroom phone calls for. You know, between George McPhee and some of the other general managers in the league, like, you know, we had to let this guy expose, but if you don't take him, and there's history of that from the last expansion draft where, you know, we had to leave this guy exposed, but we'll send you a second round pick if you don't take that guy if for future considerations, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, yeah, you lose your first round pick in the draft that's coming up. That's hopefully a strong enough deterrent from. And I did read that article you were talking about, and hopefully that might be enough of a deterrent from any of that happening.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would hope these kind of things will be kept at a minimum. And it seems like the league is they're on record. I mean, Bill, I saw Bill Delulish, and Bill was very Mr. Daly was very clear. He wants a competitive expansion team. So I'm sure the word has been sent. And yeah, so we got to get we. I think it'd be best for all parties involved.
Well, since we're on the Vegas, UNLV is playing in the tournament up in Utah, and I wanted to talk with Dana a little bit about this, but unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us today. But the tournament has the kids playing four games in 4 days, which, I mean, that's brutal enough by itself. But first two games, the Rebels put a 10 spot on both their opponents, 10-3 and 10-2. And then this afternoon they played a game Boise State team and won that 4-2. So it looks like they're in the final of this tournament, and they're going to play their fourth game in 4 days tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. So if you know, we do have some people that go to UNLV and are Rebel fans here in town. So you can find them on their YouTube link is the only way to watch the game, I believe, but they do broadcast it on YouTube at UNLV Rebel Hockey if you're interested in that. See how they do. I think that they're going to come home from that tournament 4-0, maintain their number one overall ranking in the CCHA Western Division. And I mean, that's going to put them at 16-3 on the season. And two of their losses were to 16-5 maybe, whatever it is, it's ridiculous. And two of their losses were to Division I University of Arizona, and they were in both those games right down to the third period and ran out of gas a little bit. But Rebel Hockey's rising at the right time, sir.
No, that's great to hear. You know, and I know that they want to take that program to the next level. So they definitely make a statement this year with their play on the ice and their record for sure.
Yep. Well, Chris, that's about all I got for this week. We've kind of ran through the gamut of everything I had in my show notes. You got anything else? I guess we're just going to wrap it up. I got nobody. Both our guests kind of fell out on us.
No, well, I just got a message from Zach Devine. He has been trying to call in, so I don't know why the issue, but he has been trying to call in. I just got that a minute ago. So
okay. He's not popping up on the studio here. Let me. Well, did you get him the different number? Do you have the 657-383-0864?
That's I think it's 0867, isn't it?
Tell him to try 0864.
Okay, hold on.
Sorry about that, everybody. If anybody's listening live, we're kind of fumbling around with this pretty good. Oh, I see him there right now.
You got him?
Yep. Hello, Zach. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm pretty good, except for Skype kind of failing on all fronts, huh?
Well, the Blog Talk Radio studio is letting me down a couple times here, too. Other than that, it's good to talk to you again, sir, as always.
Yes, good to be back. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's always good, always good. Let's start out. Sharks are off to a, let's say, 50-50 start. They're running right around 500. Are we seeing any sort of, let's say, well, you know what? Let's hold on. Before we get into that, Thomas Hertl goes down with his knee injury. Do you have any updates on that?
Well, that was his right knee. All the video replays were showing the knee that he injured in the infamous Dustin Brown incident a couple years back. So that's obviously less than ideal news for Sharks fans. He flew back to San Jose to, last I heard, was an MRI. So it sounds like it's a little bit more serious than just trying to get some rest and, you know, bringing it back home. So it'll be interesting to see what the Sharks do. He's really played well there as the third center. And there's really not more that Peter DeBoer can do to tinker with these lines than he already has.
Right, right. And it seemed like they were just starting to kind of warm up a little bit. And I was leading into what I was just going to say. Are we looking at a team with a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover, if you will, playing? There is some age on that team. Were they slow starting, maybe due to that factor?
You know, there's so many variables, but you're right. There's the Stanley Cup letdown. I don't know if it'd be a hangover. The Penguins have the hangover. We have We here in San Jose have the letdown. But it is an older team, especially up front. You've got Marleau, you've got Thornton, Joe Pavelski's 32, Joel Ward. You know, there's some age in very key areas for the forward group. And three of those four players I just mentioned, they were all out at World Cup. So they had a long spring into summer. Then you had their off season cut out. Then they're coming back to camp really, really late. You know, camp had already broke for the most part. And then it was just kind of slotting the World Cup guys back in. So there's been a lot that I think that they've had to overcome. Joe Pavelski and Joe Thornton have stuck together. That's been the two players that DeBoer hasn't broken up on that top line, but they're just not rekindling that magic that they had last year. And that's an issue, obviously, going forward. The good side of that is that they're finding ways to win. These are team wins. There's no over-reliance on anyone, really. So it's good to see that they're still scratching out some wins, but the Sharks are definitely going to have to figure out what's going on with the big line here very, very shortly.
Well, once again, we're talking with Zachary Devine. He writes for the San Jose Sharks for the Hockey Writers. Also does a lot of work on the younger side of things with the drafts for Hockey Profits and Dauber Prospects also. And a little later on, we'll ask about Vegas's prospects coming up in next year's draft. Chris, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, in terms of the Sharks, so exactly, great to talk to you again, as always. And Brent Burns, he is, you know, this summer we saw Jamie Benn and Brad Marchand sign very lucrative deals. I'm a little surprised. I know you're going to tell me it's still early in the season, but I'm a little surprised that he is still unsigned. And now that we're almost at the quarter pole, I think he's averaging almost a point a game. I wonder if him and his representatives are thinking, maybe we should just play this year out. It's hard to imagine the Sharks not re-signing him, but where do we stand in terms of Brent Burns and playing on his walk year?
You know, actually, I don't think that we're jumping the gun at all. If you look at Doug Wilson's history, he doesn't like to go into the summer with key free agents being a distraction all year. Thornton and Marleau signed their three-year deals very early in the season 2 years ago. And you look at where he gets his work done, this is kind of primetime Doug Wilson signing season right now. So I think if you're looking at the history of how Doug Wilson operates, he doesn't let these things fester and become distractions. If Burns isn't signed by the new year, I don't think it bodes well. And come trade deadline, if he still isn't signed, I think he's made that choice for the market. And Brent Burns is a bit of an odd duck. You know, I'm all the stories about him and his RV and some of his antics, they're all more than true. So I don't know if he's really going to sit here and say, oh, hometown discount, you know, I like being here. He likes being in his RV, and his RV goes all over. So I think that RV could just as easily park itself in Vancouver or Colorado or New Jersey or anywhere else. You know, I'm not saying he's going to sign with those teams, of course, but I think he's a bit of a wild child, and I think that that adds a level of complexity that Doug Wilson probably isn't too familiar with. Joe Thornton's going to stay here. He's just going to get a blank check from Doug Wilson, fill out a decent number where he can be good with it for a year or two and move on from there. Brent Burns, he's probably one of the three most dynamic defenders in the game today. It's going to take a very, very big number.
Yeah it's odd that...
Go ahead, Mark.
I was just going to say it's odd that dynamic of a player. I mean, obviously, you know, he could play forward. He has played forward effectively. He's rock solid from the blue line. He's not that old. I'm surprised that he has not been re-signed by San Jose. Interesting that his off the ice may be playing a part in that. Go ahead, Chris. I didn't mean to jump in on you.
Yeah, no worries. Before I hit you back to Mark, and I'm sure he wants to get your opinion on his Kings and maybe his Ducks. I'm curious about the Oilers, Zach. You know, they started off great. They were 6-0-1. I think now they're 9-8-1, so that means they're 3-7-1 in their last 11. I'll be curious of your thoughts about this young team. And to me, from afar, being all the way on the East Coast, this seems to be have been a very fragile team with the youngsters that they have. Is that still a concern as well?
I think it has to be. And McClellan, he was the Sharks coach for a number of years, so we're familiar with him out here on the West Coast. I don't know if I'm a buyer on the Oilers quite yet. Larson for Hall, that trade has been chopped up 1,000 different ways. I wasn't a huge fan of it, but I understood it from a business standpoint. I think Cam Talbot is a dependable goaltender. I think he's both playing and punching above his weight class right now. But really, with Connor McDavid, anything is possible. That is a player. He's a generational talent. We haven't seen anything like that since Sidney Crosby. So do I think that Edmonton is probably running out of gas on whatever magical start they had? Yes, but I also think that they have such a special player in Connor McDavid, where recovering some of that and him stealing a game or two for them is completely plausible as well with the players that he has around him. I don't think that they're contending for a playoff spot, or at least legitimately. They might back into one or have some other teams falter, but I think they're still a couple of years away from that. But I just can't discount Connor McDavid. He's capable of anything.
And along those lines, if you're a general manager and you had Oilers or you had Maple Leafs right now, who would you go with and why?
Oh boy. Well,
Tuffy.
That's an excellent question. I think I'd probably go with the Maple Leafs just because they are more certain down the center. But Edmonton's got good centers as well. You know, that's a really excellent question. And both teams have very maligned blue line options, and both have, I think, serviceable goalies at the very least. I'd probably give a bit of an edge to Frederik Andersen there, even though he had probably one of the roughest starts in recent memory. And
besides Bobrovsky last year?
Well, Bobrovsky that was a rough one. He had injuries. Yeah, that was rough. But coming from, I think, what they were expecting in Anaheim to have that kind of rough start, you know, kind of year zero of the Shiana plan being, you know, coming into fruition. I think Toronto's a little bit better set up. Marner's excellent. Austin Matthews, I think, will be elite. Connor McDavid is generational, though. And that's the part that I think I really keep pausing at. You can trade for elite players. The San Jose Sharks traded for Joe Thornton. I don't think you trade for Connor McDavid, though. I think a player like a Jack Eichel or an Austin Matthews, those are guys you could trade for. It costs you the farm, but you could get them. Mitch Marner is another one. We saw with Taylor Hall. Even Sagan.
Yeah, wow.
Kessel. You go down the list. You know, elite players get traded. Generational talents do not. But I think Toronto's probably situated to turn it around a little bit quicker.
I think so too, and I think Nylander's a very underrated player. I think when we were talking to start the year, I wanted to see those three kids play together, just at least for the 9 games, you know, just to get that, just to see what those kids could do at that level. And obviously, all three of them, I think I have to lean on Toronto's side. You can have Connor McDavid, and no disrespect to Oilers fan, but the hot mess that is their blue line, and I'll see you in 3 years, and we'll see. I think I'd rather have the depth on the forward core. I think Toronto's. I mean, you could see what the other number one picks from Edmonton. Yakupov's gone, Hall's gone. I think Toronto has stockpiled their talent in the last few years at a better rate of return than what Oilers. I don't think that's really debatable. I'm not breaking any news there, but I right now I told Chris this earlier on. If you're gonna lose, play exciting hockey, and I think Toronto has that right now. And it's exciting to watch Connor McDavid play because, I mean, he's just ridiculous. But I think I'd rather watch the Maple Leafs as a team just from a fan's point of view. So, I mean, that's where I am on that.
And I think with Marner and Nylander, they still have some room to grow.
Yeah.
Marner's, you know, doing very well as a rookie. Quite frankly, he's playing much better than I thought him capable of this early. He still does have issues physically. Watching him, he's a wizard with the puck. He skates exceedingly well. He's very elusive in the corners. But when an NHL-sized player does catch him, he gets ragdolled. And so I'm still a little concerned that he can survive that kind of physical play, a little bit like a Jonathan Drouin, who has developed a bit of a reputation for keeping his head down. And getting lit up for it and causing some durability issues. I could very easily see Marner being in that same grouping where electrifying talent and you just hope that nobody catches him, mid-dangle.
Well, let me jump back to the Sharks a little bit and get back into your ballpark there. Last year they went to the Stanley Cup Final as the number 3 team in the Pacific. So I don't think there's any area, you know, there's no panic right now being where they're at. I think they could do another deep playoff run if they were to, you know, play just a little bit above 500 the rest of the way. Is that pretty much the feeling there that, I mean, it's not certainly not panic time in San Jose at this point, right?
It's not panic time, but we're unfortunately watching the San Jose Sharks make some of the same mistakes they made last year. Really, there's no way else to say it, but already they're riding way too hard on Martin Jones. Arendelle's only got 2 starts so far this year. He's a career AHLer. He's clawed his way from the CHL to the ECHL to the AHL, but he's performed at every step, and that's what you want to see in goalie development. Martin Jones last year, they had to play because Alex Stalock was a complete train wreck. He could not get the consistency down. They had to go out and get James Reimer, and down the stretch, Reimer got in probably more games than he should have, but the Sharks had to rest Martin Jones. Already this year, that same pattern is emerging. That's got to be a concern. Same thing with the defense. Dylan DeMello, who they've been carrying as their 7th defenseman, who, in my opinion, could easily contend for a number 5 defender position on most NHL teams. The Sharks are just carrying him around. He hasn't played in a single game. you got to keep these guys fresh. You got to keep them sharp. Injuries are going to happen. Paul Martin is 35 years old. Justin Braun has had some struggles this year. Mark Edward Vlasic was out for a while last season. You've got to keep these guys engaged and sharp because things are going to happen in a long season. And you're exactly right. The Sharks pretty much just have to get in the playoffs. And they look like it right now. They don't look like a very interested team. They look like a team that is trying to get to the spring and hoping that the switch gets flipped on. That's really dangerous, but it's a very veteran team too. And let's face it, if the Sharks won the President's Cup or President's Trophy this year, nobody would care. Nobody would care. This team is about the Stanley Cup or bust.
Yep, that's for sure, especially with the previous President's Cups and where that ended up with the Sharks. Nobody cares about that, and it didn't help Washington last year either. And let's move on to your other area of expertise. Chris, I know you have some draft questions for him. I'm going to have to run off here in a little bit, so we've probably got about 5 minutes left. Let's get on into next year's draft a little bit, Chris.
Yeah, sure. Me and Zach Lowe talked draft prospects, going back to last year. But so Zach, the Vegas franchise has the third best chance, like 11.5% to win the lottery, hence the number one pick. In your opinion, I know it's early, but in your opinion, is it clear cut that Nolan Patrick is the number one choice come June, or is this a two-man race, or maybe even more complicated than that?
I think this is a pretty murky draft year, actually. Nolan Patrick, he's played exceedingly well as a he's played the last 2 years in the WHL, probably the toughest of the three CHL leagues physically. Last year was a very long season. They won the WHL, went to the Memorial Cup. He had over 130 points, played in 90-plus games. That is his 17-year-old year. He was just a couple days away from actually being eligible for this past year's draft. So he's going to be a very old player, physically mature, physically ready. And he's probably your front runner right now, but there is far from consensus on this. He's just returned from sports hernia surgery. He's only gotten in 6 games for the Brandon Wheat Kings so far. But he's definitely a number two center for an NHL team. I'm not sure that he's a bona fide number one center. And that's going to be the big difference for the 2017 draft compared to the previous years where you've had, a Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews, Jack Eichel, Connor McDavid. We've really got very spoiled seeing some amazing talent come out. And even further down that list, still in the top 10, though, you've had a Tyson Jost, you've had a Clayton Keller, Zach Werenskis, Provorov, Sergachev. We've really got spoiled, and I think this draft is going to snap back the other way a little bit. This draft, I probably have Tim Liljegren. He plays out there in the Swedish Hockey League for Rögle, and he was running their power play last year as a 16-year-old in the man's league. He's got average size, but excellent offensive defenseman. He's definitely in the conversation. Gabriel Vilardi over at Windsor, he's in a secondary role for them, especially at center. They've got Logan Brown as their big center out there. He's a player that I know isn't getting a lot of talk at number one, but some of these other players are in starring roles, and you do have to look at where these players are deployed. So many times we see young players go into their, the year after their draft and some older players graduate and all of a sudden they explode and people go, oh, well, why didn't we see this last year? Well, it's because they were playing second or third line minutes and second power play. They've got the skill. They're just held down because there's other players that help the team win that are above them. Eli Tolvanen is another player. He's a smaller Finnish player, but with just he's really a sniper, natural goal scorer. I saw him out in Plymouth quite a bit and just had some amazing plays. I've seen some sites list him as small as 5'8". I think he's more along the lines of like 5'10", maybe 5'11". needs to fill out. And then Nico Hirschler, I'm sure I'm butchering that, but for the Mooseheads, he's played really well coming over from SC Bern, his first year in North America, and already has 35 points for the Halifax Mooseheads, who really don't have much else besides him. They tore it down last year. They have Maxim Fortier and Nico, and that's about it. So I think those are the five players that I'd probably lump up there at the top, and it's really no surprise that three of them are centers and one of them is a defender.
And my last question for you on the draft, Zach, is, you know, the last couple of years you've mentioned, it sounds like there's definitely a difference in terms of elite talent at the top comparing this coming draft to the last couple, at least for now. But the last couple of drafts had for teams was, it was strong, in my opinion, in depth. And teams, if they did their homework and did a good job, could do well in rounds 2, 3, and 4. When we had George McPhee on the show in the summer, he emphasized that teams can be built through the draft, and I'm sure he's going to try to take some of those picks and expansion and turn them into draft picks. Granted, he's not going to get first-round picks, but he's going to try to compile as many second, third, and fourth-round picks. How would that be a good philosophy with this draft, do you think?
I don't think this would be the draft to really go in for an army of picks. There's always going to be players that surprise. You're going to find the players down there in the sixth, seventh round, that one scout really likes and pounds the table for, and then 3 or 4 years down the road really blossoms into an NHLer. That is unfortunately the exception. We all hear the stories, you know, player like Patrick Hornquist, who was the last player taken in his draft, and then he's an integral part of a Stanley Cup winner.
Heinrich Lundqvist was a 212th overall pick, I believe.
Right. You know, and these are all players that obviously have had pretty darn good careers, but you look, those later rounds are also littered with players that didn't really even play past college in some cases. It's hard, yeah, especially this early. You know, we're still in November. Players can, you know, they still have at least half a year to develop, show us what they've got. I'm not seeing the early returns that we saw the last couple of years, so I think that this draft is going to be a little bit lighter in depth, at least. I think last year's draft actually is going to get, it'll take a couple of years, but I think we'll look back and look at that draft as one that had substantial depth. This year, I feel, is at least a level below that.
I was looking back over the last 2 years, and out of the top 10 picks in both drafts, I think 16 of them have at least played one game in the NHL. And if you take any two draft years back to back, going back, there's maybe 10, 12 players out of, you know, combining both drafts that ended up sticking in the NHL out of those 20 picks. And to see that many players in just, you know, a year and 20 games or whatever it is now, to at least get their cup of coffee in. And most of them, you know, have from 2 years ago, they're now roster players. I agree with you. I don't think that depth is there, and I think it's a bad draft to try and build the future of your new franchise with. But like you said, you never know. There might be some jewels in the rough there, diamonds in the rough, if you will. Going back, one last thing from San Jose. Who's going to be there unprotected for the boys here in Vegas to get a look at, whether it's a younger player guys may not know about, or a veteran who may be over the salary cap and underperforming that they might want to take a chance and hope they get exposed? What are we looking for out of San Jose?
I think ultimately Las Vegas would be wise to reach into the San Jose Sharks defensive depth and pull somebody from there. You know, assuming Brent Burns signs, which is a huge caveat, obviously, You're going to protect Burns. You're going to protect Vlasic. And then, interestingly enough, David Schlemko has inserted himself into that discussion, especially with a very valuable contract that he signed with the Sharks. I think it comes down to him versus Justin Braun for that third protect spot on defense. You look at who that leaves available. That's going to leave you Brendan Dillon. It's going to leave you Paul Martin. The remainder of either Justin Braun or Schlemko. And then who I think ultimately Las Vegas will take is Mirko Mueller. He's still a project. He's a young, smooth skating defender. He needs time. Vegas has plenty of it. But he's a player that a couple years down the road, I think could be a serviceable 4 or 5 guy on a defensive side. I watch every single Barracuda game. He drives me nuts with some of his decisions with the puck. But his defensive game has really improved this year. It's taken huge strides forward. And if he can just get a little bit of confidence with the puck to go with that skating, that reach, that size, he's got the whole package. I think most of what's going on with him is between the ears. And that's who I would have Las Vegas take a look at. He's a young guy. You look at who's available in this expansion draft, the defense and the goaltending is going to be set in Las Vegas from day one. You know, Kevin Constantine might be able to get them to the playoffs in a trap system. It's really going to come down to the forwards, but I think San Jose's defensive depth is going to be something that Las Vegas is going to reach into.
Well, all right. I'm just about out of time, sir. Thank you again for joining us. You guys can follow Zach at Zach the Bear. That's Z-A-K-K the Bear on Twitter. And he links all of his Hockey Writers articles through his Twitter page. And you can also go to hockeyprofits.com for any more of his draft as we get closer and closer towards the 2017 amateur draft. Zach, it's been a pleasure talking to you again as always, sir. And as we get closer to the draft, we're definitely going to have you back over to see where those kids you were mentioning shake out as the season goes forward, sir.
Definitely. It's always a pleasure to join you guys. Love listening to you. Doing a great job. And thanks again for having me.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that. All right. Well, we will talk to you soon.
Take care, guys.
All right, Chris. Well, I got to wrap it up.
All right, just to wrap up real quick, it wasn't great news for Vegas in terms of the draft, but it's still early, so we'll see what the returns are. And we're going to be taking next week off for Thanksgiving, and but we'll be back the following week, and we'll iron out, we'll have all the bugs taken care of, and we'll talk off air, but I think we might have come back with a very exciting show, so I'll leave it at that. A little tease. Interesting topic that will affect multiple cities. How's that for a tease?
I like it. So usual, we'll talk to you guys. We hope everybody has a happy American Thanksgiving. Even our friends north of the border, go ahead and get some turkey and stuff in and have a good time with the American football. And for everybody out there, be safe traveling over the holidays. We want to have you back in the audience come early December when we have – I don't even know who's coming in. Chris has a little shocker there for us. But make sure you follow Chris on Twitter, at the NL King, for all the writings that he does for Last Word on Sports and his Islanders content over at IonIsles.com. Just make sure you follow at Vegas Hockey Pod. Follow us on iTunes. Give us hit the subscribe button. We really like seeing that. Other than that, everybody have a great Thanksgiving, and we're gone.